I am at the moment trying to make contact with the man that we're going to talk to next, who is Maurice Fitzpatrick. And the death was announced today, if you are into Irish politics, or indeed world politics, I suppose you could say. The death was announced of John Hume, the former leader of the SDLP in Northern Ireland, and also the recipient of, joint recipient of a Nobel Peace Prize. Maurice Fitzpatrick is on the line this evening. Maurice, good evening. How
good
are
evening
you?
To you. I'm
sorry to come to you immediately live, Maurice, and not get a chance to say hello before we spoke. But technical issues at this side again and again and again. But there you go. Anyway, Maurice, you wrote and produced a wonderful documentary on John Hume called In the Name of Peace. John Hume in America, and it was on the 30th of July back in 2018 that you and I spoke on this program about John Hume and about that documentary. Can I ask you firstly about your feelings today, what you felt when you heard of the death of John Hume?
It was very difficult to absorb. It still is in many ways, the passing of an 83-year-old man who has been plagued with health issues isn't a huge surprise to anyone, but yeah. At the same time, he's a huge public figure, and it reminds me of a phrase of the poet W.H. Auden, the body of opinion. There's a body of opinion and a body of work associated with John Hume that suddenly we have to assess and reflect on when he passes. So it's been difficult to absorb, and I think it's a huge moment in Irish history.
Now, you spent a lot of time with the family and his wife, Pat, particularly. By the time you were making the documentary and writing the book, John himself was unwell at that stage. And I think I recall during the interview, you remarking to me that John Hume doesn't know who John Hume is and has no concept of the value that he has been to the island of Ireland and indeed peace on the island as well. Did you get to meet John? I can't recall.
Oh yeah, I did meet John quite a few times. Yeah. I mean, initially it was to film a previous film of 10 years ago called "The Boys of St. Columb's."
Oh,
St.
Yes.
Columb's was the secondary school Hume attended in the 1950s. So at that stage, while his health was in decline, he was still capable of being a camera view.
Yeah,
and I met him then, but then. As time went on, I was making a film about his political life and particularly his engagement with senior U.S. figures for peace in Northern Ireland. I was, to an extent, working with John, but it was very often, more often with his wife Pat, who extremely able and knowledgeable person about Hume's political life, and she helped me and the family, the children helped me a great deal as well. Hume at that point was, retrenched. He was not giving interviews, and I fully accepted that. And
right.
While he's in the film, he doesn't have a speaking role in
yes.
the film.
Yes, yes, yes. There's been a lot today. The television here in the studio, going through the different news channels, everywhere you turn, John Hume's face is there, or there's somebody talking about John Hume. What was it that attracted people to him? Because I know in the documentary that there was a great move towards him from America, the likes of Ted Kennedy and Tip O'Neill, they kind of moved towards him and invited him to come to them and get them involved in the whole thing. What was it about his character?
Well, there was something indeed about his character, his absolute integrity and clarity when it came to methods of resolving political issues. He felt that there was no room for violence. He repeatedly stated that, Chair.
Mm.
So, the view of a senior U.S. senator, like you mentioned, Ted Kennedy, that was absolutely critical. And any real figure island of Ireland who had a different view, who really didn't get Ted Kennedy's door, was far too controversial for a senior U.S. figure with a lot to lose, but like that, to countenance having any kind of involvement with a politician who was in the least bit ambiguous on the use of violence. Hume had that much. He also had it planned out in his mind exactly what was required from the Irish government's point of view, the UK government's point of view, all various stakeholders in this very strange fuglio of this conflict in Ireland. He had clear vision of what was required, and he was up to, you know, the teacher in him in this first iteration. He was a teacher. He was up to explain this again, you know, what was required and how people could help people in Europe, you know, this burgeoning community of nations in Europe and indeed the United States could play an assisting role in political reform and peace in Ireland.
His legacy, what do you think, like everybody is talking about the Good Friday Agreement today. People are talking about, you know, the work he did as leader of the SDLP, the civil rights movement, I suppose, where it all started for him. What will his legacy be, do you think?
Well, the fact that we do have a functioning assembly now, we've been through one of the biggest ruptures in the last 3 years, the suspension of this assembly. The fact that it is running again, one can be very cynical about the reasons for it, but the fact remains it is up and running.
Yeah.
And that shows people of any, of whatever persuasion they are, that the need for political action in contradistinction to violence. That's one key legacy, Chair. Another, I mean, it just occurred to me recently, we can never forget where Hume came from in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s in Derry, a place of huge disadvantage for the Catholic minority, a place of you know, huge bitterness about the way in which politics was administered. And Hume came from that place, and he made it a better place. So this, put it as simple as that, he was a lot of the progress that's happened in the island of Ireland is attributed to Hume. He also, let's remember, created a role for the Irish government that the government had very much abdicated from, and that, namely, a continuous focus on the North. Today, the Department of the Taoiseach, Department of Foreign Affairs, takes it taken as read that they will have an ongoing engagement with the North. That was not so during John Hume's youth, and right up until, coincidentally, the year in which he became elected, and in February 1969. And when he had this position as first as MP for Northern Ireland and later MP, you know, Westminster and European MEP, when he had this position, he made it very clear to the Irish government and later also the UK government that it really did need to do something about the North, that there was something structurally defective about the Northern Irish state, that they had to restructure, sit around a table and bring the hardliners in and imbue them with a sense that the only political way forward was through constitutional politics.
I won't delay you much longer. I know the line is bad, and I apologise to listeners for that, but what you I know it's not going to get any better, so there's no point in trying to recall you. But I don't want to delay you too long either, Morris, but can I ask you about the bravery of the man? Because a lot of people have paid tribute to him today, and a number of people have talked about the courage. And no matter what he did, and no matter how people viewed it, if it was, in his mind, the right thing to do, he did it. And I suppose the biggest example of that would be when he started talking to Gerry Adams, who was president of Sinn Féin at the time. The Irish government couldn't be seen to talk to him. The British government couldn't be seen to talk to him, even though there were back channels going on all the time. But Hume came out and said, this is the right thing to do. And if I don't do this, we're not going to move past. We need to talk. And that sums him up, really, doesn't it?
That's right. I mean, you use the word credibility, and he did have a huge amount of credibility at the time when he opened dialogue with Gerry Adams. And it was a tremendous risk for him to take, because there were voices, and I mean many voices, in high levels, who basically saw him as one step away from being an agent of a paramilitary organization by seeming to lend this credibility to the leader Sinn Féin. And Hume, as you rightly said, he had a completely different analysis. he didn't waver from where he stood, from how he saw things, but he did feel an obligation to bring in the Republican dimension of Northern Ireland into the political process. And you know, he took a lot of criticism for that, including from members of his own party, who would not have seen that as a correct step, or that, you know, they would have criticised that he hadn't exacted the right concession or sufficient concession from Sinn Féin before opening that dialogue. Right. But for Hume, I mean, to paraphrase what Hume said at the time, if it saves one life, I will do it. And there's a tremendous logic to that.
Mm. Last year, we lost Seamus Mallon. This year, we've lost the wonderful John Hume. Are they making politicians like they used to anymore?
A slight correction, actually. It was just the beginning of this year we lost Seamus Mallon.
Oh, was it? Oh, it was. It was January. Yeah. That's right. Sorry, yes.
It was January, yeah.
Yes.
There are some wonderful political representatives around. I mean, there are many of the other varieties as well, but there are really strong voices, including in Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
It's true. It was a sort of a nature that both Seamus Mallon and John Hume came along at the same time, and others. It was a very strong team of civil rights defenders and some of the founding members of the SDLP do go down in history as among the most fervid upholders of democracy at a time when there was scant little democracy in the West, but they held the line, as Bill Clinton said in the John Hume in America. John just held the line.
All right. Well, listen, Morris, it's been lovely talking to you. I really do appreciate it. I know that you and I have had 3 or 4 conversations throughout the day trying to organise this and the wonders of technology. Yeah. And I do appreciate the time. I did a little blog earlier on, and I reposted the interview that you and I did on the Emerald Connection. And just as a reminder, and I mentioned as well, I said, look, when you listen to this, please then go and watch the movie, the documentary, In the Name of Peace, John Hume in America, it's called. It's fascinating, it's brilliant, and I really do appreciate you taking the time out to talk to us today, Morris Fitzpatrick.
It's been my pleasure, Jerry.
Oh, great.
Thank you so much.
Okay, and apologies again about the lack of introduction on the start of it. Thanks, Morris.
Not at all.
See you. Bye-bye.